On episode 5 of the Culture Vacuum podcast, I'm going to give you guys my review of the Disaster Artist and the current crop of contenders for Culture Vacuum's first annual Best 10 Films of the Year. So sit back, relax, and get sucked in. Culture Vacuum Podcast, Episode 5. I am your host, editor of culturevacuum.com, Samuel Polley. Gonna tell you guys, don't have a guest book for this show, and that's fine. You know, the show doesn't need guests every week. It's nice when we have them. So expect this episode to be a little bit shorter. But as you heard at the beginning, we got a Disaster Artist review and the top 10 films of the year. I'm going to be deciding those within the month of December as the year wraps up, of course. There are some movies I haven't seen yet. So these are all movies that I haven't seen that could possibly join this list of contenders I'm going to give you today. And that is Call Me By Your Name, which looks great. Guillermo del Toro's Shape of Water, which also looks great. Darkest Hour, which I don't know what to expect of the movie, but, you know, good performance from Gary Oldman. The Post, which is Steven Spielberg's Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep. Need I say more? I, Tanya, the Tanya Harding documentary, Hugh Jackman's new movie, The Greatest Showman, and Downsizing. Those are all movies that have piqued my interest that may or may not join this list of contenders, but I just haven't seen them yet, so I can't make a judgment on them. However, here's what I'll say before giving you this list of contenders. So right now there are 11 contenders that I have seen and enjoyed enough to make them potential entrance into my top 10 movies of the year. So of the movies I tell you today, at least one of them is going to get knocked out. And just looking at the early reviews for the movies I haven't seen yet, there's a good chance that half the movies I'm going to talk about today are going to get knocked out of the list. So I want to save time. I'm not going to go too much into them in detail. But here we go. These are Culture Vacuum's contenders for the best 10 films of the year so far. And these movies are in no particular order, but you can probably guess from my comments which ones I like more. Okay, number one, Logan. I've gone back and forth on this, but I'm pretty sure that Logan is my best movie of the year. I'm not entirely sure. There are some movies on this list that have gotten pretty darn close to Logan and might end up taking the number one spot when I really sit back and think about it. But Logan came out in March, and it's just been going. My biggest fear for Logan is it's going to get snubbed by the Academy for Best Picture and for Patrick Stewart, that there's just so much competition for the Oscars this year, as there usually is, that Logan's just going to get swept away. And that's what I'm worried about. But if you've heard me talk about Logan, you know I love this movie. It is beautiful. It is quiet. It is small. It is everything that superhero movies aren't, and that's just what makes it so good. So please, if you haven't, what is wrong with you? Please go see Logan. Okay, next contender, Blade Runner 2049, the sequel to Blade Runner, which the original Blade Runner created this beautiful sci-fi world that inspired tons of anime, tons of other sci-fi filmmakers to come. It's a really good movie, man, Blade Runner. However, the first Blade Runner, it's this incredible world, this beautiful world built by someone who clearly knows what they're doing, Ridley Scott, and it's just a treat to watch and just look at. But the story is very simple. The story of Blade Runner is Deckard is given an assignment to go kill 4 replicants. That's the movie. Nothing more, nothing less. It's good, but it's a visual masterpiece, not really a storytelling masterpiece, except for the monologue at the end. That was nice. But Blade Runner 2049, it took that world of Blade Runner and told this super compelling story within that world, and I actually think it's a better movie than the first Blade Runner, and that's not to take away from the first Blade Runner, but when the story of Blade Runner 2049 is something really intriguing and thought-provoking, and I think that's just what makes it exceed the original. I know that's heresy, but it's, you know, who cares? Next contender, Lady Bird. I'll describe Lady Bird like this. It's still in theaters, so you can go see it right now. It's the best mother-daughter relationship I've ever seen portrayed on a screen. Possibly the best parent relationship I've seen too, but I'm not entirely sure, but definitely the best mother-daughter relationship I've ever seen. Saoirse Ronan is just outstanding in this movie, as she always is. And I don't know who plays her mom. Laurie Metcalf, who plays her mother, she is also great in this. As with all the movies I'm mentioning today, if you haven't seen it, please go see it. Lady Bird is probably looking, knowing the Oscars, I wouldn't be shocked if this was our best director or best screenplay, because people love Greta Gerwig. Anyway, up next, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I really enjoyed this movie, mostly because it's not really a movie with the traditional protagonist. Like, no one in the movie is a particularly good person. There isn't a villain. The villain is just the world and reality, and it's really just a movie of, it doesn't create some form of hyper-reality where everything's tied up in a nice bow. Things are painful, things suck, but it just shows, like, people are imperfect, and this is the kinds of heroes that we get. I'm speaking broadly about it just because, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but Three Billboards is still out in theaters. Go see it. Up next, Wind River. I think I talked about this a few episodes back, but Wind River, I don't think, if anything is going to get knocked off, Wind River is, well, like, of the movies that are likely to get knocked off this list, I think Wind River will be the last one to do it. It was directed and written by the writer of my second favorite movie of last year, Hell or High Water. And it takes that Western idea where it's the environment plays a character, and it wraps around this. It's a pretty interesting murder mystery, but it's, again, just the world is bleak. However, this world does have heroes. And Jeremy Renner, who is kind of a boring guy in the Avengers movies, I really liked him in this. Elizabeth Olsen, she is also great as his trusty sidekick, so to speak. But yeah, Wind River, I think it's on DVD and Blu-ray right now. It's definitely worth a watch if you want just like a nice Western set in the snow. Up next, a movie I saw very recently, Coco. I today met the first person in the entire world who doesn't like Coco. She and her girlfriend went and saw the movie. On my recommendation, they came out of the theater and said, "We didn't like it. It was so boring. The kid was so annoying." Those people are no longer my friends anymore, because Coco is beautiful. It is a beautiful movie. It is one of my favorite Pixar movies. And the end of, if you are not crying at the end of Coco, I think you might be dead inside. This movie is just, it's astounding how beautiful of a story this movie is. And it's also just really funny, really heartfelt. I think there's definitely Pixar movies better than it, like WALL-E and The Incredibles are still better than Coco, I think. But in terms of emotional impact, it has Inside Out levels of gut punch at the end for you. So go check out Coco, and you probably have it. This movie's made a ton of money. Okay, another one that's likely to fall out, depending on what the movies I haven't seen yet are like, but Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman. Now, Professor Marston is going to be one of those movies that it's not going to win. It's definitely not going to get a Best Picture nomination. There's movies that are better than it that deserve the nomination more. But the performances specifically, and I want to make sure I'm getting her name right. Okay, so it's the person who plays the wife of Professor Marston, Rebecca Hall. Her performance in this, I think there should only be one person who deserves a nomination for this film, and it's Rebecca Hall. She, as Professor Marston's wife, is just, she's so funny and charismatic in this role, and she portrays this character so well. And yeah, she deserves a Best Actress, or they might go for Supporting Actress for her, but either Best Actress or Best Supporting Actress for Rebecca Hall this year, she 100% deserves it. The movie itself is pretty good, but Rebecca Hall is definitely the standout. And I'm expecting Marston to be knocked out of this list. Like, if I had to knock one out of these 11 right now, it would probably be Professor Marston. But that doesn't take away from the fact that it's a good movie. It just says how good a year 2017 has been for movies, and seems like nothing else. All right, next one is The Florida Project. So a few years ago, this movie called Tangerine came out. It was shot on an iPhone, and it also starred two trans actresses in the leading roles, and people enjoyed it. I saw it. It was pretty good, but you know, you could definitely tell it was a first feature. Florida Project, though, up until the very end, I'm like, dude, this movie is tragic. And it's not tragic in the sense of it shows you terrible things happening, because what Florida Project does is it's about people living in a motel, and these poor people who they can't afford rent, so they live out of motels. And what Florida Project does is, instead of telling it through the perspective of the adults, it tells it through the perspective of children. So the things you actually see in the movie very often aren't tragic, and they're seen through this childhood innocence. But watching the movie as an adult, you know what's really going on. And that's what makes Florida Project so tragic. Because the kids are like, something's wrong, what's going on? But you as an adult, you know exactly what's happening. And the way that this movie utilizes show, don't tell, by sort of putting a veil of childhood over everything in the movie, I thought was brilliant. I would not be surprised if this picked up a director nomination. It certainly deserves Best Picture, but it's probably going to get sweeped away. We'll have to see. Up next, Dunkirk. This is, I believe, the third largest budget of these movies I've mentioned today. I think it goes Blade Runner, Logan, and Dunkirk. I'll have to check later. But Dunkirk is a World War II movie told through Christopher Nolan's favorite device, time manipulation. If you've seen Dunkirk, you know what I mean. Dunkirk isn't really a movie, it's an experience. You don't have any of the names for the characters, you just know that's the pilot, that's the soldier, that's Harry Styles. That's all you get. But in watching Dunkirk, it doesn't really matter, because it invites you to imprint yourself upon these characters and just experience it through their eyes. And it does a great job of doing it. This movie, for sound, not sound, this movie is a lock for sound editing and mixing, because it's loud. Like, the gunshots in here aren't fake-ass Hollywood gunshots. They're real guns. When the first shots went off the first time I saw this movie, I was ducking in my seat because I thought I was getting shot at. But it's not just the sound design. It's the cinematography. It's the framing. Well, that's part of the cinematography. It's the lighting. It's the way just the environments are booked, and how claustrophobic things feel and how big they feel at other times. And it just puts together this experience. Like, Christopher Nolan is one of these guys who is standing firm in the idea that Netflix won't replace filmmaking. And right now, he's right, Netflix movies aren't that good, but Dunkirk is a movie that, like, I have a decent surround sound system here at my house, but I don't even think I'm going to, I'll wait for Dunkirk to come to HBO or something, but I don't think I'm going to be able to replicate that experience at home. It really is a movie you have to see in a theater, just because of the way it utilizes sound to accompany the image. Love Dunkirk. And it's going to be like it's probably going to be the darling of the Oscars this year. If I had to put my money on it right now, Dunkirk and The Post, which I haven't seen yet, but The Post is huge Oscar bait. Dunkirk and The Post are going to be the ones that get the most nominations, but I have to see The Post first before I can make a definitive prediction. Next, The Big Sick. Kumail Nanjiani and his wife, Emily, put together a movie about the story of how they met each other, and it's so funny. Yeah, The Big Sick, it's an Amazon film, and unlike Netflix, Amazon decides to put their movies out in theaters, and it's a very good investment on their part. When you watch The Big Sick, the story's really well done. It's a super funny movie. The Big Sick, I'm thinking, is going to get knocked off this list too. I really enjoyed it, but for nominations at the Oscars, it's probably a lock for screenwriting. But, you know, it's directed by Judd Apatow, and it shows limitations there. I did enjoy The Big Sick, and it's on Amazon Prime right now, so you can watch it for free if you're an Amazon Prime member. I really did like The Big Sick, but compared to the other movies on this list, I don't think it holds up as well as a whole movie, but I still very much enjoyed it. Super funny comedy. Absolutely recommend. Okay, and the last movie that I have seen that is a contender for my top 10 films of the year is The Disaster Artist. And I think that's a good place to leave it off because we're about to give my review for The Disaster Artist. So those are the movies currently in contention for Culture Vacuum's top 10 films of the year. Again, that is Logan, Blade Runner 2049, Lady Bird, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Wind River, Coco, Professor Marston and the Wonder Woman, Florida Project, Dunkirk, The Big Sick, and The Disaster Artist. The movies that I have yet to see that are probably going to enter these contenders just based on early critic reactions is Call Me By Your Name, The Shape of Water, Darkest Hour, The Post, I, Tonya, The Greatest Showman, and Downsizing. There might be movies that I'm forgetting, but I think that's all the ones that I'm looking forward to. If I see something else that makes it on the list, then I will be sure to update it. But expect my top 10 films of the year a little after Christmas, because that's when everything comes out. That's when all the movies have come out just in time. And you'll probably notice Star Wars not on the movies I think will make it into my potential top 10. Listen, guys, I might change my mind. Star Wars is the big elephant in the room, but, you know, Force Awakens was my number one movie of the year in 2015. Boy, oh boy, do I regret that, because, I mean, The Force Awakens, it's fine, but compared to just prestige films, eh? But, Star Wars The Last Jedi could come out, could blow my mind, and could make it onto the top 10, but right now I'm just predicting it's going to be the same quality as The Force Awakens, which means it'll be good, not great, and that means that it doesn't deserve to make it on this list, because there's tons of good movies I've seen this year that come nowhere near to this list. So those are my potential top 10 movies. Bunch more I have to see before I can make the final list, but that's what's currently in the running. Okay, now for my review of The Disaster Artist. The Disaster Artist is the story of the making of The Room. I love this movie. Like, it's not just a well-made movie, and it's not just a great story, but it's also so funny. And it's funny because of Tommy Wiseau. If you know The Room, if you've seen The Room, and you know anything about The Room, you know, this guy Tommy Wiseau comes out of nowhere. He has millions of dollars at his disposal, which he puts into making this movie, The Room, which apparently costs $6 million. I don't know how. And it's known very widely as the worst movie ever made. Wiseau thought he was making the greatest movie ever made. And, but over time, he really changed his mind and started lying, saying, no, I meant to make a bad movie. It's a satire. But when you look at The Room and then compare it to what he makes now, which is very self-aware, it's not the same. The Room only exists because they thought they were making the greatest movie ever made, and they made The Room. James Franco plays Tommy Wiseau. He also directs this movie. His brother Dave Franco plays Greg Sestero, who was the co-star of The Disaster Artist, and he still works with Tommy Wiseau today. They're very good friends in real life. What I love so much about this movie is Franco's portrayal of Wiseau. It starts out, you can tell he's doing a Tommy Wiseau impression, but as the movie progresses, that fades away. It's like, it's really just like the first scene he's in, you're like, this is funny, but it seems like an impression. And then after that, it's fine, it goes away. So once you've settled into the role of Tommy Wiseau, the rest of the movie just flies by. And here's why I think The Disaster Artist stands an outside chance of being considered for Best Picture and possibly winning. Now, this is a post-Moonlight world, and I saw an article on Vox the other day talking about why there doesn't seem to be one definitive frontrunner for the Oscars. And it's because none of the Oscar masters called it that Moonlight was going to win the Best Picture last year. The Oscars in the past, ever since they changed their voting system, have been favoring safe, boring movies that tell the story of filmmaking. Or they tell about the art of storytelling, or the art of acting, because the Oscars love movies about the movies. It's the most boring thing in the world, but it's sort of true when you look at the kind of movies they have. The old system used to reward dramatic movies, and the ones that really grabbed your attention. But this new system has been favoring the boring as of late, and Moonlight is not a boring movie. It is not a safe movie. And the fact that Moonlight won Best Picture really changes your perception of what the Oscars are going to favor this year. When you look at the contenders that I looked at, they're all very different movies. Only a few of them seem to be Oscar-baity. Like The Post, which is coming out with Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep, which I'm sure will be very good. That's probably the most Oscar-baity movie coming out. It's about journalism, which is a form of storytelling, which is something the Oscars love. It stars two of the greatest actors to ever live, directed by the greatest living director, Steven Spielberg. And also, it's about covering up government corruption. It's about journalists exposing government corruption. And, you know, Donald Trump is the president. So depending on how political the Academy wants to be, they might want to make a statement by giving The Post the win. We don't know. But right now, they might just want to make a statement by giving The Post the win, but they also might not. The Disaster Artist, what I like about it is it carries all the Oscar appeal of La La Land from last year. Because La La Land is a movie about two people who go to Hollywood to pursue their dreams, and they fall in love in the film industry. And then they have to choose between each other and their careers. And da 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 da. Now, The Disaster Artist, minus the love story, stars two people who go to Hollywood to pursue their dreams, and then they end up choosing between their dreams and each other. Instead of a romantic partnership, it's a friendship. But it's still the same basic concept. What The Disaster Artist does is it has that Oscar-baity appeal of people going to Hollywood to make it big on a big screen, but it couples that with a good story and really good writing and really good performances. And it's a better movie than La La Land. I'm sorry. La La Land is fine. It's so fine. The music is great, and the movie looks beautiful, but it is fine. It couldn't be anything more than fine. It's just vanilla, milk, water, whatever you can think of, that's La La Land. The Disaster Artist is not that. And that's why I think The Disaster Artist is not going to win, but has a decent chance of winning. Because you look at who they were able to get. I won't spoil the cameos, except for the ones you see in the trailer. But, like Judd Apatow, but you get the feeling Hollywood loves The Room. Because it perpetuates this myth that anyone can make it in show business. Which we all know to be complete bull. But that's what La La Land did. Anyone can make it. These two both made it in Hollywood. They just had to make sacrifices and show gumption, kid, and moxie. But the story of The Room is a story of insanity, of people who force their way into the industry, and then they end up making the worst movie in the world, and that's how they acquire fame. And I think there's just something about that if you're in Hollywood, you're a big producer, or a big actor, and you're in the Academy, that's the kind of idea that you want to perpetuate. And I think this movie's going to appeal to a lot of the Academy. Because young Hollywood specifically loves The Room. They adore it. And the Academy had a recent surge of inductees, and they were the youngest class of Academy inductees ever. So you now have this slightly younger Academy. Maybe these young people are going to watch all the movies that came out this year, like Logan, like Blade Runner, like The Disaster Artist, and instead of giving it to something that's very targeted towards the old Academy, like The Post. And I'm not saying anything bad against The Post. I haven't seen The Post. But The Post on paper looks like the most Oscar-baity movie in the entire world. Okay? That's all I'm saying about The Post. But these younger voters in the Academy, these are people who did grow up watching X-Men movies, and they watch Logan, which is probably the best superhero movie ever made. There's a debate between it and The Dark Knight, in my opinion, but these people who grew up watching Logan, these people who went to film school learning Blade Runner, watching the original Blade Runner, and these people who grew up in the cult phenomenon that is The Room, that's who is going to be voting this year. And it's really the first time you have a large group of young Academy voters. And they're going to... I wouldn't count out those movies. My biggest fear is that Logan is going to get snubbed. But these younger Academy voters may change that. They may get Patrick Stewart the Academy Award win he so desperately deserves. So that's why I wanted to talk about The Disaster Artist today. Because in the Academy of 2 years ago, you're not going to see The Disaster Artist get anywhere near the Academy Awards, let alone a win. But now that you have a younger voting body in the Academy, I think you're going to see a lot of movement in The Disaster Artist that you would not see in the past. I don't think The Disaster Artist is the best movie of the year, but I would not be surprised if somebody won something off of The Disaster Artist. So definitely go see it. I really enjoyed it. It's probably going to end up in my top five, but again, there's seven movies I haven't seen yet that I need to make that decision on. And that'll do it for today's episode of the Culture Vacuum Podcast. Thank you very much for tuning in. Hey, if you liked this show, you should go to culturevacuum.com where I put editorials up every week or so. You can also follow me on Twitter at Samuel_C137. I know, I'm a Rick and Morty fan, which means I'm smarter than you. And that's going to do it for this episode. Sit back, relax. You are now being released from the vacuum.